David in Awas. Our agenda, we will first introduce ourselves so that we know who we're talking to. I'm Priscilla Temba, the chairperson of the CLEP Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises. DG, before you introduce yourself, can the members introduce themselves first? Honorable Groenewald.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dirk Veldman, member of the committee, representing Gauteng.
Morning. I'm Buisela Jacobs, member of the committee representing the Free State.
San Bonan. Ikama u Petsi Bande. I'm from Mpumalanga Province. I'm the member of this committee.
Hey, good morning, Madam Chair and the members of the Select Committee. My name is Nkosinathi Ndlovu. I'm sitting on the parliamentary wing around this table. I represent the Department of Labor. Thank you.
My name is Musa Zondi. I in the Ministry of Labor.
Good morning. My name is Lerato Molebatsi, and I am from Corporate Services in the Department of Labor.
Good morning. Sam Morotoba, Department of Labor, Public Employment Services.
My name is Peggy Matuna, Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Labor.
Good morning.
Sheikh Mukanto, Compensation Commissioner, Department of Labor.
Good morning. My name is Sipo Ndebele, International Relations Department of Labor.
Good morning. My name is Vikas Sirkisen, Acting Chief Information Officer.
Virgil Seafield, Department of Labor, responsible for employment standards.
Sipo Sala, representing Inspection and Enforcement Services.
Tebogo Tejani, Chief Director for Western Cape.
Thank you. Tebogo Tejani, Chief Director, Provincial Operations, Western Cape, Department of Labor. Thank you. Unati Pongo, Office of the Director General.
Number one to Kali from Salga.
Yuli Zolando from Communications and Parliament.
My name is Ronelle Barreta. I'm the researcher for the committee.
My name is Pumelele Loli Sibisi. I'm the committee secretary.
Thank you. We're going to start first, DG, with yourselves. We've got Salga with us. Salga would also like to present to us in your presence, because there are issues that they feel that as the department you can assist. So without any waste of time, we're going to can the department present. And I know that because it's not the strategic planning, it's the annual report, of which you will tell us the successes and the challenges. I think there will be few, and with the challenges to say why we didn't. Yes. Okay. And also, we will deal with the report of labor centers. If you remember, there was a time when we invited the department to come and you were unable to come. You apologized, an apology was taken. So we're going to deal with the issues that we found in the labor centers. We will raise those issues so that because we had planned that we're going to meet on the 17th, and we see that this will be an expenditure that is not like planned. So we want to deal with this now, so that when you come there, or maybe then you know what are the issues that we wanted to raise to you the time we called you during, was it August? Yeah, I think it's August. But over to you, DG. Yeah.
No, thanks. Thanks, Madam Chair. Just to say, Chair, that we would be interested to hear your experience also in terms of the issues from the labor centers and so on. But also what we would like to undertake is that we will still will want to have a dedicated session in terms of the overall comprehensive report, you know, that we have compiled in terms of our own provincial visits, so that the issue of the visit as undertaken in the Western Cape, for instance, is also located within the context of that very same discussion as well. But I think also in the context of the discussion of this annual report here in this meeting, it would also be quite beneficial to ourselves to also tap into the experience that the honourable members had insofar as your visits to the labour centres around here. The presentation as we make it, we start off with the actual outline in terms of what will be covered in the presentation. But we also do restate one point, and that point is that our duty is to contribute towards the creation of a conducive environment to investment, economic growth, and employment creation, as well as decent work. And for us to achieve this, our anchor point is around regulating the labour market conditions and systems in the South African economy, and we do so through development of legislation as well as regulations. We conduct inspection, compliance, monitoring, and enforcement through a dedicated branch. We also advance a perspective that says worker rights are essentially human rights. We also promote employment services through a dedicated branch, public employment services. We promote equity through various measures, including our branch that focuses mainly on labor market and other institutions, of course, that we use in promoting equity. We deal with issues of social and income protection, and we do so through, for instance, mainly our points of intervention will be the Unemployment Insurance Fund as well as the Compensation Fund. We promote social dialogue, and we have institutions that have been put in place to promote the culture of social dialogue in the country. Madam Chair, in the presentation of this report, the report itself will take the form of a reflection. In other words, it will want to capture what the experience has been. Excuse me. It will want to capture what the experience has been, but also it will also make observations about that kind of experience. We'll also, in the light of the observations, we'll also deal with the issues of how do we conceptualize some of those particular experiences. But in so doing, we also we locate our work within the broader work of government. In this instance, we talk to the service delivery outcomes. For instance, service delivery outcome 4, it deals with the issue of decent employment through inclusive economic growth, and two other outcomes, to a better and safe Africa in the world. Outcome 12, seeks to develop an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and an empowered and inclusive citizenship. Now, what slide number 5 attempts to do is to mirror the Department of Labor strategic objectives against the service delivery outcomes and outputs. Talking to outcome 4 on decent employment through inclusive economic growth and taking it from 4.1 to 4.6 as outputs as outlined in the slide. Our strategic objectives are indeed to contribute towards the employment creation, promote equity, protecting vulnerable workers, which we basically conduct through the work of the inspection and enforcement services, strengthening social protection, again with our interventions through UIF and Compensation Fund, promoting sound labor relations. Essentially, it's the kind of work that we do through our labor market branch. Monitoring the impact of legislation, again, is the work that we conduct through our labor market branch. And strengthening bilateral relations. And that essentially talks to the issue of the work conducted through the labor market branch, but basically it's essentially our international work through ILO and other international bodies. On outcome 11, the creation of a better South Africa and how that better South Africa has to create to a better and safer Africa, the continent and the world, we honed specifically around the question of strengthening our multilateral and bilateral relations. So the work that we do through organizations such as the ILO, and not only just them, but also others in the region. On outcome 12, an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service, our strategic objective here is about strengthening the capacity of labor market institutions, as well as strengthening the institutional capacity of the department. For us to be relevant to this particular service delivery outcome by government. Slide 6, Chairperson talks to our strategic objective 1, which is about the contribution to employment creation. Essentially what we had said for ourselves in the year under review, we said that we would need to have an approved public employment services policy, Public Employment Services Act, and regulated regulations and guidelines in place. And we said we would want to see that through drafting such a policy as well as the bill and finalized for submission to Cabinet by September 2010. In this regard, we do have the Labor Relations Act, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, and the Employment Equity Act amendment bills, and these bills had been taken through a Cabinet and are now under consideration in NEDLAC. We had also said under the same objective that we will also need to measure ourselves against the number of job seekers registered in different categories. And we said we wanted to capture 100% of the reporting job seekers on our system. Insofar as this particular objective and the target that we set for ourselves, Madam Chair, we had in the year under review 652,611 job seekers that reported for registration in different categories, of which 74%, and numerically speaking, you're talking of 483,000. I'm sorry, I'm not good with numbers. So 483,038, I think that's what that number says, were captured and registered on our system. So basically, we would then say, essentially, instead of meeting our our 100% target, we could only achieve 74% of our target. Slide number 7, Chairperson talks to the job seekers in opportunities registered and placements, and it breaks it down as per province. It's quite an interesting slide because in itself, Chair, it tells quite a story about our macroeconomic situation and condition in the country, and you can actually deduce a number of issues out of it. So the first column is the tabulation and outline of a province, the 9 provinces. The second column talks to the issue of job seekers that reported. The third column is job seekers registered. And the fourth column is about the percentage of the job seekers that have been registered. The important column is around the question of opportunities. For instance, let me make an example. In the Eastern Cape, you had 55,000.
Number of about 7,000.
also have a number, a column dealing with work placement per each province, and we also have a number, a column dealing with the UIF as well as compensation fund columns, as well as the column dealing with skills development. We do want to make a point here, Chair, that insofar as this slide is concerned, there is the work that we're doing to try and clarify ourselves as to why under Gauteng, for an example, we have a zero. In Limpopo, you have a zero. Western Cape, you have a six. So we're trying to clarify this. In fact, in Limpopo, it's even worse. The compensation fund, nothing happened there, as per, if you were to take what the slide says, but also in terms of skills development. We seem to suspect that this might probably be a capturing problem, but we do not want to come before this committee and speculate. We are working on some sort of detail to clarify ourselves on this, so we will certainly come back to the chair and the select committee to clarify these particular points. On slide number 10, excuse me, chair, let me just... I think I had some spin off last night. So. Sorry. We continue on slide number 10 with the same sort of strategic objective, Chair. We had said in the year under review that the number of companies and workers in distress in affected sectors were to be provided with assistance. And we said that those applications had to be processed within 5 working days from the date of receipt. We then do appear before the select committee and state that the 19 companies and 6,108 workers were assisted to the value of about 4.2 million through the training layoff scheme. We also allocated 48.5 million through the UIF to Productivity South Africa to save 15,000 jobs through turnaround strategies in 130 companies, particularly in agriculture, steel, manufacturing sectors, construction and printing. And through the work of our entity called the CCMA, we've been able to save a total of about 9,207 jobs from possible large-scale retrenchments. And through the Unemployment Insurance Fund, we have invested 35 billion rands out of its 52 billion rands as a portfolio. And the compensation fund, 27 billion in commercial and social responsible investment portfolios. We had also said this is on slide 11. It's a continuation of the presentation on slide 12. That we also invested 2 billion rands in private bonds through Industrial Development Corporation. 2 billion rands of the Unemployment Insurance Fund, 76 transactions with a value of about 1.5 billion were approved and are expected to create 10,000 jobs. Those are permanent jobs, rather. And also saving 7,186 existing UIF permanent paying jobs. That's through our interventions with the Industrial Development Corporation. On the training layoff scheme, again, that slide talks to a province, the companies that have applied, workers affected, as well as the amounts involved in facilitating the training layoff scheme. We do want to clarify, Madam Chair, that the training layoff scheme works on the basis of somebody that may be retrenching, and therefore you need to create some sort of alternatives and so on. And one of the alternatives is the trading layoff scheme and so on. So in essence, the question of, for argument's sake, in the Eastern Cape, it's six companies that applied, affecting 459 workers that were subjected to the training layoff scheme. And yet in the Free State, you had none. That could be suggesting that in the Free State, in the period under review, you had no company that that applied, or you had no company that was retrenching. And I think this point has to be somewhat understood. The same thing also with Northern Cape and Limpopo. It could be that an opportunity that was there for companies to apply for the layoff scheme, training layoff scheme, did not, either did not do so, or there were essentially no retrenchments there. So that's what we want to clarify on this slide. And slide number 13, it talks to the number of companies that were assisted through workplace challenge program to become world-class competitive and so on. And our target was 120 companies. However, 230 companies were involved in the workplace challenge to promote productivity. We also had 105 future forums that were established to facilitate implementation of turnaround strategies. So in essence, I think we have outdone ourselves here insofar as the target is concerned. We had also said that we were targeting 3,000 SMME managers assisted to manage matters related to intellectual property. Of the 3,000, we have registered a progress of 2,707 SME managers that were trained to sustain and grow their enterprises. Slide 14 talks to some of the key challenges and remedial actions that we're also taking to unblock some of the performance indicators. We remember that we spoke of an approved public employment services policy, the Employment Services Act, and so on, and related regulations and guidelines. Now, indeed, Cabinet has considered these particular pieces of legislation, and they've been published for public comment. And the reasons are there as stated in terms of a policy that already exists on employment. Public consultations on the bill have been conducted between January to March 2011. And the bill itself, in its current form, is being considered by social partners at NEDLAC. And the regulations will follow the gazetting of the Employment Services Act. The action to try and bring finality to the matter is that the minister is making an intervention to nudge, I like this term, nudge NEDLAC to speed up and conclude negotiations on the bill. On the percentage of registered job seekers referred for counseling guidance and skills and so on, the reason for the variance is that a small percentage of registered work seekers placed in vacancies and work placement opportunities. And the reasons for that is you have lack of legislation to compel employers to register employment, to register opportunities and report on filled vacancies. Also inadequate human and IT resources in this regard. And the kind of action taken to resolve the problem is that, you know, there has to be a conclusion on the Employment Services Bill negotiations at NEDLAC, and that the bill would have to be tabled before Parliament for debate and finalization. And that insofar as the IT systems are concerned, we'll need to integrate a CIR, which is one IT system, an employment services system, to register job seekers in placement. On slide 15, number of jobs that were saved through social interventions, we saved 13,000 jobs were saved from a target of 15,000 as a result of funds received during the second quarter. And the reasons are as tabulated in terms of the National Skills Fund transferred to Department of Higher Education and Training, that turned down application for funding. The UIF board was approached to allocate funding during quarter one to Productivity South Africa. And in terms of action taken, is that Productivity South Africa board resolved to apply for future social plan funding in time. The special employment opportunities provided to eligible people with disabilities from all racial groups. What we had is that there were no new employment opportunities provided, and the reasons for that, you have insufficient income generated, no approved policy and legal framework for sheltered employment factories, insufficient collaboration with placement agencies to place disabled people in the open labor market. To try and resolve this, we are currently working on the business case. We have a proposed legal framework to be included in the Employment Services Bill that has been discussed at NEDLEC. We're also looking at the review and improvement effected on the current sheltered employment factories marketing strategy. On slide 16, it looks like 6, there is an obscured one there, sorry. on the promotion of equity in the labor market, we had said that we needed to amend the Employment Equity Act and relevant regulations. I think we have reported that the Employment Equity Act insofar as the proposed amendments to it have been published for comment, and it's also serving before NEDLEC as we speak. On indicator 2, we said the Employment Equity Implementation and Enforcement Mechanisms we needed to strengthen them, and we had targeted that we would conduct follow-ups on 60 Johannesburg Stock Exchange listed companies, and listed the Johannesburg Stock Exchange listed companies and DG reviews by the 31st March 2011. We had also said that we'd want to review and amend the Code of Good Practice on key aspects of HIV and AIDS and employment by the 31st March 2011. We hereby report that 61 copies of DG's final approval letters of affirmative action measures to address income differentials were issued. We also conducted a gap analysis. we are also working we've worked on terms of reference and project plan for technical assistance by the International Labour Organization on implementing Recommendation 200. On HIV and AIDS. On objective 2, actually a continuation of the same slide, employment equity implementation and enforcement mechanisms is strengthened. We had targeted that we would subject 200 companies to DG reviews by March 2011, and that 60 of those, 60 Johannesburg Stock Exchange listed companies and 140 designated employers were targeted. In this regard, we have achieved, as against the target of 200, we have achieved 266 companies that were reviewed, and they are broken down as follows. 96 were of the 266, as against the 60. Were JSE listed companies. total of 9,468 Employment Equity Act procedural inspections were conducted, and 79% compliance was received. I think this, oh yes, that's 7,000, which numerically stands for 7,449. Sorry. Now, on slide 18 on DG reviews, is actually the breakdown per province. JSC listed companies is the second column. Third column is designated employers. And it also reflects on the recommendations that were made on either both the JSC as well as the JSC listed companies as well as designated employers. In Gauteng, we had no target on JSC companies. However, we had a target of 44 designated employers, and we reviewed 41 of the 44. And 41 of the 44 reviewed, 41 received recommendations. In KZN, we had six, I'm just making an example here, of the JSC listed, and of the designated employers with a target of 36, and of the six, JSC, we reviewed four. Of the 36 designated employers, we reviewed 39. Insofar as JSC companies reviewed at least against the four in KZN, there were no recommendations that were made. But for designated employers, out of the 39, 33 were served with the recommendations. So that's how the slide reads all the way through. Slide 19, on the question of protection of vulnerable workers, the first indicator spoke to the Conditions of Employment Act having got to be amended. It's now a known fact that that bill went through a cabinet, and it's currently being dealt with at the level of NEDLAC. Wage differentials investigated. Our target was to amend norms and benchmarks for proportionate income differentials. We hereby report that the report has been interrogated and signed off by the Employment Conditions Commission. The third indicator was to review existing sectoral determination. And we were targeting specifically farm workers, domestic workers, wholesale and retail, hospitality, civil engineering, leadership, private security and forestry. All the investigations and envisaged for review, amendment or establishing sectoral determinations were completed. Extended public works program, determination and code of good practice was also published. The small business determination has also been referred to NEDLAC for consideration by social partners. On strengthening civil society, we're targeting that eight civil society organizations involved in the world of work were to be funded. Out of the eight, we have funded seven civil society organizations. And the listing is there. So we have Ditsela, COSATU, SACOTU, South African Labour Bulletin, CRADOG Advice Office, OLAQUE Advice Office, and Workers' College in Natal. On indicator 5, we said 200,000 workplaces inspected for compliance to ensure 80% compliance to labor legislation. We had said that we were to conduct 200,000 inspections as per the breakdown. Now we hereby report that 192,000 workplaces were inspected and audited, 378 of these were conducted in high-risk sectors to enforce compliance with the Occupational Health and Safety Act. 147,622, which is 77% a compliance rate, was achieved. Chair, take note that we are just below the target of 200,000 and also just below the target of 80% as we stand at 77% compliance, and as against the 200,000 inspections to be conducted, we only did 192,000. Okay. Slide 21 is also a breakdown of the total inspections inspections of workplaces. Column 1 would be your province or provinces, and column 2 talks to the inspections conducted. Column 3 talks to the companies complying out of the total number inspected. And the percentage of compliance is the fourth column. The fifth column is quite a broad column. It's broken down into subcategories. Notices issued. Notices issued, for instance, let me clarify this point. Notices issued, for instance, if we were to take Gauteng, is 4,998. Okay. But of the 4,998, 2,202 were undertakings. And of the 4,998, 280 were compliance orders. And of the 4,998, 1,723 were contraventions. Of the 4,998, 182 were improvement notices. Of the 4,998, 136 were prohibitions. So that's how that column has got to be somewhat understood. It's one big column, and then subdivided into five different areas of types of notices that were issued. I think the rest reads the same and along those lines. Slide 22, we had said that 80% compliance had to be achieved through advocacy campaigns. This particularly is targeting your SMMEs. And our target in this regard was to hold seminars in the iron and steel, hospitality, forestry and construction. We also said we need to train shop stewards in the targeted sectors. We have achieved this in the sense that we have held a seminar for iron and steel sector in Port Elizabeth, and we had 176 attendees that participated. Insofar as the forest sector, a seminar in Maritzburg was held, and 96 attendees participated. In the construction sector, we also held a seminar in Gauteng, and 365 participated. Insofar as training of shop stewards in the targeted sector, in other words, the sector is enunciated above, we had a total of 1,021 shop stewards that were trained on employment equity, on Occupational Health and Safety Act, and Basic Conditions of Employment Act. 80% of the investigated complaints were to be settled, and we said in achieving this indicator, we will need to investigate complaints and settle them within 90 days of receipt. In this regard, we reported that 120,566 from a total of 154 complaints were investigated, and 116,000 of those, which stands for 75%, were settled within 90 days. We have, in other words, we have not met our total number of complaints received by center service officers and inspectors, and the total number of complaints that were investigated against the received, the total number of complaints settled within 90 days, and the percentage of such a settlement. The last column are monies, are recoveries, are monies that have been recovered as a result of these particular interventions. When we appeared before your counterparts in the National Assembly, the Portfolio Committee on Labour last week, the Northern Cape, Northwest had a 0 day. There was no figure reflected. So we have now corrected that. So the figure of monies reflected is just above half a million rands insofar as Northwest is concerned. That's all right, Church, yes. I'm following orders from the chair. Mine is to only just simply comply. Thanks. It's slide number 24. We needed to promote the level of knowledge insofar as the Occupational Safety Act to employers as well as workers in the agricultural sector. And in this regard, we said our target was to implement the pilot project in Limpopo in Mpumalanga. In this regard, the concept of roving safety representative inspectors was launched in Limpopo as well as Mpumalanga and is now ready to be rolled out to other provinces. We also had said that we needed to reduce the prevalence of silicosis in the non-mining industry. And our conduct was to conduct, our target was to conduct the baseline to determine the prevalence of silicosis, silica exposure in non-mining industry. We then do hereby report that a baseline study on silicosis was conducted and a report is available. The extent of exposure to silica dust for 200 companies operating in Gauteng as per our sample has been established. 49 companies were assisted during inspections in developing a program for the control of exposure to silica dust. 208 companies were inspected with regard to silica exposure, and 54 complied, which resulted in the 26% level of compliance. On slide 25, we reflect on the challenges and remedial actions that we're taking stock of our current experience and how we're observing that experience and how we conceptualize that particular experience. We had said that 200,000 workplaces inspected for compliance to ensure an 80% compliance in labor legislation. The target, as we had indicated earlier, was on the level of achievement stands at 25%, and the reasons why we could not achieve the 80% mark is that we also had our inspectors that participated during the public service strike. There is also an element of inadequate number of human resources for us to be able to meet this particular target. So we are currently looking at reviewing the targets in accordance with the resources available to actually strike a balance and an alignment between the two. But we're also conducting an organization development study to determine appropriate numbers and competencies. on the question of the implementation of the IES strategy with its pillars, the reason for variance and as we had reported earlier on that we had the major variance in reason. Job profiles in trying to unblock the situation, job profiles have been reviewed to implement the first phase of professionalization. The third area is that we said that we needed to reduce noise-induced hearing loss by 5%. And this target has not been achieved due to the fact that research has not been conducted as you know due to delays in the procurement process. However, we are also happy to report that in addressing this situation, the Bid Adjudication Committee, which is a departmental committee, has approved the request for competitive bids, so the procurement process is then unfairly. On talking to the issue of monitoring the impact of legislation, we had said that one key indicator was the impact of the department's strategic plan on stated goals and objectives they researched and reported on. And our target was mainly the issue of implementing research, monitoring, and evaluation agenda. And the achievements are as stated, that we developed reports around industrial action and annual labor market reports, which are very interesting reports, and would want to encourage everyone to read those reports. Are quite interesting. They tell a story. The UIF client satisfaction survey and non-compliance studies in the taxi, domestic sector, and catering industries, and bulletin and job opportunity and unemployment in the South African labor market reports have been published. The client satisfaction survey for medical doctors was also conducted and reported. On basically an issue talking to a service delivery outcome for an efficient, effective development during the public service and an empowered and inclusive citizenship. And you remember that we had said, Chair, that our strategic objective talking to this service delivery outcome is the issue of strengthening the institutional capacity of the department. And insofar as this is concerned, we had said to ourselves that 90% compliance with the, would want to achieve 90% compliance with the AG recommendations. No, I'm wrong. The indicator was that. And then we targeted that 100% compliance with the AG reports and recommendations was to be achieved. In this regard, we would like to state that for the first time in a period of about 6 years, the department achieved an unqualified audit opinion in the year under review. And we hope to maintain that achievement and sustain it, Chair. We had also said that one of our key indicators was 90% of all funded posts were to be filled within 6 months. And we said, talking to the 90%, we needed to have a percentage of all funded posts being filled within a specified period of time. As at the end of March 2011, our achievement stands at 91.4% of posts that were filled against a target of 90%. And therefore, the vacancy rate, as we speak, stands at about 8.5%. We also said one of the indicators was 40% of women and 50% of youth employed at most levels, and 5% of the people with disabilities were to be employed. And we targeted that we needed to have a percentage of women, youth, and people with disability employed in line with the employment equity plan. We hereby report that at senior management level, we have 35% achievement against a target of 40. Insofar as young people are concerned, as opposed to the target of 50%, we have a 43% achievement. The national target for people with disabilities in the public service is 2%. Currently, the Department of Labor stands at 2.7%, which basically is almost 3%. I employed against our own goal that we had set ourselves of 5%. Continuing with the issue of strengthening institutional capacity of the department, the indicator was on the issue of percentage of customer complaints attended to within 14 days of receipt, and we had said that our target is for 90% of such complaints or cases received having got to be attended within 14 days. Our department is rated third best among departments in resolving calls logged through the presidential hotline. And as at March 2011, over 4,742 calls were received through the presidential hotline. And of that number, 4,677, 98% were cases that were resolved. We also had an indicator on the number of service delivery points accessible in line with geographic norms and standards. And our target was that we needed to develop geographic norms and standards as well as an implementation plan. In this regard, we want to report that the spatial mapping of labor centers to ensure accessibility to clients in line with outcome 12, service quality and access, is in progress. On slide, I suspect number 29, it's a slide talking to budget allocations and utilization. Basically, what it does, Madam Chair, is that it reflects on the areas of activity on the far left, but it also gives you a picture of what is it that was appropriated in the budget, but also a reflection of the actual expenditure and the variance thereof in between. Items. What we would like to say is that variance percentage-wise of the final appropriation stands at about 0.5%, and we regard that as being very good, Madam Chair. Slide number 30. Is then a tabulation of line items in terms of what is committed per each item and what has been transacted against per each line item, but also the variation affecting each item. Now, for 2011-2012, the key aspects of our strategic plan again, that's a reflection on page 31, 32, and I suspect no, not 33. So the two slides they talk to what the service delivery outcomes and outputs are, and what our strategic objectives are in terms of the second column, and the key performance indicators. I just do feel that, Chair, perhaps that I don't need to take time for the committee in going through this particular slide unless there are specific areas of clarity that me ask this. What is it that we expect to support from the SLED committee? We state three areas. The first one is that we expect the SLED committee to continue supporting and advocating the programs of the department, as well as providing feedback on how they view our service delivery objectives. The second one is that we would still expect the SLED committee to continue participating and supporting the department's international relations work and study visits. And of course, the qualification is that if the SLED committee participates in this particular objective, Parliament funds, not ours, not ourselves as well as whatever. But I think that's also subject to negotiations. Item three is that just like the chair did in the recent MBZO that we had and others that we have had before, is that the chair, we expect her to continue participating in campaigns and marketing interventions. So those are the expectations, Chairperson, and that's the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. Let me welcome the rest of the members of SALGA. You are welcome. We apologize for starting before you arrive. Can you introduce yourself so that we know who is here? I don't want to introduce you.
No, thanks very much. I'm Councillor Mashilo. I'm the NEC member of SALGA. I'm chairing the human resource, and I'm the executive mayor from Kangala in Mpumalanga province. I'm with the CEO, Colin George, at the back, and want to apologize once more. We had some hiccups at the airport this morning. Thank you very much.
Can you introduce others also?
My apology. I thought they were introduced. I've got Councillor Rahlaga. Councillor Rahlaga is the MMC in Bujanala. He's sitting, Councillor Rahlaga can raise your hand, so members, yes. He's sitting in the HR committee of the SALGA NEC, and they've got an advocate, Yawa, who's our HR manager, and Slade Pile. He's from Devon in the HR. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, can I check with you? We said we've got a presentation from SALGA. Can we take the presentation from SALGA, or can we go to discussions with the presentation from the Department of Labor? Let's take the presentation from SALGA. It's not long. Can we go straight to the presentation, and then afterwards then we interact with the department? But thanks, DG, for the presentation. I don't want to comment on it, but we hear what members say. Over to you.
No, thanks very much, Chairperson, and greetings to the colleagues. Indeed, we are grateful that we've been given this opportunity to make a presentation to the Portfolio Committee.
Correct. We are the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises. The Portfolio Committee is in the National Assembly.
Okay.
You see, and you from here, Honourable Councillor, you'll be the one who's going to educate all the members of SALGA that we've got two houses and you belong to the NCOP. So you must educate the people about the NCOP, that we've got the select committee in the NCOP. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think we must become permanent members of this committee of the NCOP and SALGA, so that we can understand these things as well. And given the voting rights, you must assist us, Chairperson. Yeah. Now, once more, thanks very much. I think, Chair, we will indeed make a short presentation to the select committee has been corrected. And I'm going to ask Advocate Yawa so that we don't waste time. I think you'll make a short presentation, and I think we'll be taking discussions soon after that the chairperson is through a directive. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Good morning to everybody on protocol observed. As we are still reconciling the technology, but the presentation was circulated, perhaps we can save the chair's time. Chairperson and members, we are speaking about four or so outcomes after this presentation. One is an amendment to the Labour Relations Act, Section 68. Presently, the Section 68 in the Labour Relations Act in relation to damages that do arise when there is a strike action. Presently, the Act is talking to a possibility of a labour court awarding damages as compensation to damages that may have arisen. But it is only if the strike itself was unlawful. But if the strike was lawful, and there is an unlawful act of damage to property, the Labour Relations Act, as it presently stands, does not give a room for a court to consider to compensate the victims. The submission that SALGA will make is that there should be a consideration that whether the strike was lawful or unlawful, an unlawful conduct that happens in the course thereof, there should be some protection to whoever may be a victim, for lack of a better word. The second one, and that would talk to any property, could be municipal properties which we experience in our own space, but government and other private property does get affected, and even hawkers and non-striking employees. But equally, Chair, in the same vein, the issues of health and environment, the Essential Services Committee, we are aware that it's not necessarily belonging here, perhaps it may well be for the Central Services Committee, but the Labour Relations Act does talk to the Central Services Committee having to designate particular services as essential. So far, they have designated all other kinds of refuse, including organic, as essential. But there's a particular category of refuse which only becomes essential if 14 days or longer period has lapsed. Our as we shall exemplify, we do think that maybe the degree of sophistication is not as high as to be able to split hair that indeed scientifically this is organic and this one is non-organic, and therefore it must wait for some number of days. The short proposal is that all refuse be categorized as an essential service. And the other resolution that we seek is to propose that in the bodies NEDLAC and the ILO, this sphere of government called local government, whose voice, according to the Constitution of the Republic, is SALGA, must have a direct representation. Presently, all other bodies, including the two spheres, provincial and national, are in these bodies, but this voice tends to miss off, and in the course of that, I think the hegemony of all the efforts does miss this critical element. So those are the submissions, Chairperson, that we want to make. Then on an exposition, Chairperson, we can just perhaps do a legal exposition, literally to say that with strikes, as we know, my CEO does put it positively. He says, especially for local government, you do get a different type of deodorant during the strikes. That your dustbins, whilst we have Clean Cities campaign and our citizens do respond very well to that campaign, but we do get instances where our own employees, when they're on strike, they tend to take it from the dustbins into the street. And when it is there, I mean, it really will be going too graphical to try to imagine what is normally in a dustbin. And the argument is then that if we do say that that which gets out of a dustbin into the street and sometimes into water, as our pictures are demonstrating, must be left there for some 14 days before it is essential and therefore must be removed because it may then start to be a hazard to people. We do think that it may not be making sense, and hence we then making a blanket statement to proposal to say all refuse must be treated the same, and it must be essential so that there is no hazard and safety issues to the populace. So that's the long and short on the essential services. Just to classify all refuse without splitting hair as essential, because it does pose. I'm struggling a bit with my system here, Chair, and I'm trying to save your time. Chairperson, on the right to strike, needless to mention the point that Salga is making is that the right to strike is not equal to the right to damage to property. It is not an unlimited right. It is a right that is as fundamental as any other right of the citizens. And we then do say that in the course of the strike, we do experience the situations where it goes beyond that. And we think that, like the recent Supreme Court of Appeal decision on the 27th of September, but in the context of the Public Gatherings Act regulation, that if there was a foreseeability that it could deteriorate to beyond what it is in terms of exercising the democratic right, those that are leading the process, including the law enforcement as in the police and so on, they then need to take an assessment. And if there is that risk, then that the right has to be limited. Or if people do not want to limit the right, then they must be available should it deteriorate to other people being sufferers of their own actions. But we do think that, Salga, that if that section, which is section 11.2, is in the Gatherings Act, it's not in the domain of the Labour Relations Act, which is almost your Bible, if we should say, in the employment context. And if it is there, then it makes the life easier that every one of us is on the same page, that to actions there may be consequences. And therefore, all of us as leaders equally must take responsibility that as I exercise my right, I must not then be getting into the space of somebody else's right. So that is the point, Chairperson. We do show the pictures there and the thing that it does. And in so saying, we do think that we're not trying to talk bashing of anybody's right. We're just talking a situation towards a balancing of the rights. That the fundamental right to use the industrial course must equally be balanced with the rights of others who may choose not to, or those who have property and other things that are there. That's all we're saying. We're not trying to stand on the way. And we do think that when the committee were to be amenable to that view, the International Labour Organization itself has pronounced, and in many countries, this balance is in fact there. And in our own country, it is there. It's just that it is put in the Gatherings Act and in the Labour Relations Act. Chairperson, I do think that we've covered that point. Let's then come to the point on page 11 of the slide. The point is just about the representation of SALGA to NEDLAC and to the ILO. As we're saying that NEDLAC is a structure created by law of parliament. It does say that it will be government, business, labor, and some other such bodies. But what is in the space of government is omitted is the sphere called local government. And we do think that for it to be balanced, there is a necessity to round it off by having the full spectrum in terms of the constitution represented. Critical outcomes, without mentioning the whole lot of critical outcomes at NEDLAC, even the Systems Amendment Act that Parliament has passed recently and the President has signed into law, in the processes of that, and that law talks to local government essentially, but local government was not in the deliberations, and we do have certain issues, but I think the platform is not for that at this stage. There were other accords during the economic recession. Important critical accords were struck there to try and mitigate the situation. The voice of local government was not there. The recent skills accord is equally the same. We'll not go to the grocery of it. But we just want to leave that for the balance and the roundness and fullness. I think the sphere, as the Constitution says, it would be of benefit to have them. The same is true of ILO Chairperson for the same reason. And therefore, in closer, Chairperson, and then maybe my leadership will then answer questions of the other slides. If we just go then to slide number 20, just to summarize in a pointed fashion the proposed way out or solutions that SALGA is putting to the committee, and then perhaps we can get things from there. One is that with regards to damage to property, that is Labour Relations Act 68, Section 68, be amended perhaps by importing the terminology in Section 11 of the Regulation of Public Gatherings to make an avenue that those who should be on the receiving end when others are exercising their right and it gets loose, that there be a way of being equal to the law, as the Constitution says, to its benefit and protection. One of the benefits of law is compensation should judiciary so see that as meeting. So just to create a legal space so that courts have got a basis to interpret and give that constitutional benefit and protection to all. Then the second one with regards to refuse to person is the one where we say, instead of the current arrangement where as you may see if you flip back to the other slide, particularly slide 14, the other slide 16, the collection and disposal of refuse of organic nature is essential. And the collection and disposal of refuse at the disposal site is essential. But the interesting thing is that when it's at the disposal site, it's already removed into where it should be. But I don't know whether it's because now it tends to be locked when it's in a disposal site, that it must be essential that everything else gets immediately attended to for the good of all. But then you get this anomaly where in some instances, including a domestic refuse and include the refuse in public roads and so on, you can then must do some counting, half a month, and then you can start to be concerned. We do say that it is a bit splitting of hair and may not be helping, especially with our experience. And we say if it can be all categorized as refused and be dealt with as essential, we do think that the life and livelihood of the citizenry would be protected. So that's what we're proposing as a solution in relation to refuse management. Then, as we're saying, representations of SALGA to NEDLAC and ILO, the voice of local government for the round-off, we do think that there can be a role. The last item, Traverson, which we didn't leave, but perhaps we can in the proposal and keep quiet. We do have in the Labour Relations Act an appreciable system where there could be bargaining councils as a mechanism for faster resolution of disputes. They do get some degree of independence within a broader framework. In our own context, and it's true of others, we do believe in the dispute resolution of appointment of commissioners, it becomes SALGA for the employer and our unions for the other side to say, we think Jefferson will be fine, let's have him or her appointed, but so-and-so will not be fine. The CCMA did question the impartiality of that. As you know, the law would say, without fear, favor, prejudice. We do know that it has turned itself into an industry, that some of us are only doing that. And therefore, if the same people who I must be impartial in relating to judging about are the same ones come end of the year, we may say you've got a job or you don't have a job. We do think that there's a risk that the very wisdom that the legislature and parliament has put for that dispensation may be compromised. We do think that perhaps as a simple model, without going to sophistications, the CCMA, which is a product of law passed by parliament, does have a governing body, and they do appoint that body of panelists from a bigger spectrum of things, having met particular criteria. There's a big distance, at least, between the body that appoints and those who must be recipients of service, and it leaves the confidence of the recipient of the justice system, so to speak, a little bit unquestionable. But for us, we have experienced that. Okay, maybe today I was switched to this one, I must be paired to this one, so that at the end I'm sweet and sour to both, and hopefully they will still be able to tolerate me. But what we're saying in short, that model must be changed to a model that ensures that impartiality, no favor, no prejudice, and as the spirit of the labor relations. So those are the four submissions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. For that one of SALGA, we won't interact with it today unless if there are issues for clarification. Because we have received it, the department has just received it. It's for the department to take what we call Honorable Frunenwald ad hoc. We must take it and we'll go through it, and where they see, we will invite you again when they come, when we discuss the labor centers, also on the 17th. We will inform you, we will confirm that, and then maybe during that time they will come with responses. We really appreciate it that you are really part of us. You are part of the select committee, so you are part of the NCOP. So we must work together in making sure that we are shaping, we shape the laws of this country. Honorable members, over to you, Honorable Tau. Advocate, can you switch off your mic, please? Honorable Tau, followed by Honorable Sibande, Honorable Jacobs, Honorable Groenewald, Honorable De Beer, in that order.
I wanted to deal with the one who started first, okay. Before, because you see, like you say, Salga, it's part of this, and this is quite historic, and we need to appreciate their role. But this submission that Salga is making to us or presenting here, I would propose that they formalize the submission. Formalize the submission and then maybe decide whether if they are going to submit it to Parliament through the NCOP as a private member's bill. That seeks then to amend the current bill as second, another approach could be that we have a separate meeting with Salga to deal with this particular matter, because for obvious reasons, these kind of amendments, they would need the attention of NEDLAC as well. It will have to be threshed out at that level even before we can agree as Parliament whether if we process it in a manner in which it is being proposed. So I would rather propose that we deal with it in either way. Whether if they submit it as a private member's bill seeking amendments to the Labour Relations Act through the NCOP. They do have a seat in the NCOP and they have the right to make a submission to the chair and therefore make a formal presentation or introduction. Of course, that would also mean that the matter will have to be brought to the attention of the minister, so that the time it is then introduced, the minister must be abreast on those kind of developments. And then the necessary processes would then start, whether it be back to cabinet and then NEDLAC and then come back to us once those finer things have been sorted out, and then we can deal with it as Parliament. For obvious reasons, the Labour Relations Act is a Section 75 bill. It's not a Section 76. So the introduction of such in the National Council of Provinces would be quite difficult. The first reading would obviously will have to go to the National Assembly. So it would be good that at some point or the other, Chair, that a meeting is then sought between the Portfolio Committee and ourselves to see how then do we engage with the processes of matters raised by Sam. But thank you very much.
To your second question, I think the DG wants to respond
to assist
the process, because I thought Salga has come here because there are amendments going through the LRA, but can you explain that?
No, Chair. Just a very small point. Just reacting to the suggestion that has been made, which I think is fine, but I would also suggest that there has to be a direct engagement, also including ourselves as the department, on this particular matter. You know, before all other, probably other formal processes actually take place. I'm informed, the honourable member, that Mr. Ian Ollis has tabled a private member's bill. I think that's what we call it. That's what it's called here in the National Assembly, around the similar lines, Section 68 and so forth. himself, he may want to be doing something else or whatever the case is and stuff like that. So I would suggest that there has to be somewhat of a structured engagement just outside the committee setup, such as this one, also pulling us ourselves in the department. Thank you very much.
Honorable Dan.
No, thanks. Not too much to ask. My interest, probably my apologies for having arrived a little bit late, because it might have been dealt with. If it has been dealt with, it's fine. It was the question of the wage subsidy. and then the extent to which, because even yesterday when listening to the Minister of Finance, the manner in which he deals with it, he was not very explicit. So probably the department, I would wish the department just to give us an idea of whether it is there, or it's a policy matter that has been discussed at some point, or some NGOs are still going to grapple with it at another level until it is being thoroughly processed. If it has been dealt with in my absence, then I'm willing to get the response from you, Chair. I don't mind. The provincial compliance to audit queries, in the report it is said that some provinces do not have the capacity. I can't just remember which page is that, but the impression is then created that there is a challenge in that area when it comes to compliance to audit queries by provinces in particular. One would appreciate to get a sense of what then is it that the department is doing to ensure that there is that capacity at the provincial level then to be for in order for provinces to be able to respond or to comply to such. An interesting thing, Chair, I might be reading it incorrectly, your page 43, that is now the original document. No, not 43, 46, and addendum 6, companies applied for foreign labor. You would note that, maybe I might be reading it wrong as well, it has got province and target. Free State and Limpopo, there are no targets there for Free State and Limpopo. And my common, not even common, but practical experience of our own program, I mean, having been to taking Parliament to the people to the Free State now recently, one of the major problems that the people were raising in Putadichaba is the inflow of foreign nationals from Lesotho into that area. Now, does it mean, therefore, that we don't have a problem there? Why is it that the department doesn't have targets? Yes, I can see that there are companies that have been inspected, but does it therefore mean that those that have not applied, or if, I don't know how to phrase it, in the what makes the department not to have any target or intention to look at some companies in the Free State? Limpopo, even it was worse when we went to Limpopo with regard to the question of foreign nationals. If you can remember, there was a company, I think it was a mining company or so, that even upon engagement with the company, it then said it had applied to the department and so forth. But noting that there's no target there in Limpopo, it's quite interesting for me to know that that's, does it therefore imply that there are no problems with regards to that? I might be reading the addendum wrong. I stand to be corrected. Under the expenditure, under expenditure on goods and services. Probably more, it would be quite interesting to get some more detail on these goods and services.
We know, for instance, one of the clarion calls that the President has made during the State of the Nation address was basic procure in time, order whatever, pay in time. Now, if you say there's an under expenditure at that level of goods and services, what causes that? Is it that service providers are not being paid, or the department is procuring late, or what is the nature of that under expenditure by the department? The last one, Chair, I think it would be quite interesting to hear. I hear the DG mentioning the listed companies of the JSE that have been reviewed. It would be quite interesting to note what these reviews are. You know, what are the normal? I'm looking at this other presentation. Follow-up conducted on 60 Johannesburg Stock Exchange listed companies, 61 companies of DG's final approval letters of normal, it's not that. But there is a slide that speaks to the companies that have been inspected or whatsoever to recommend. What recommendations? Here's the question. Thank you very much. The 170 designated companies were reviewed and 156 recommendations were accepted. What are these recommendations? And especially the JSC, I'm even more interested in the JSC ones, where it says 96 JSC listed companies were reviewed. 87 recommendations were sent. What are these recommendations? I mean, it would be good for us just to get a sense of what the department was able to observe and what the recommendations were. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chairperson, I would like to start by commending the department for this marvelous report, but nevertheless, we'll be having some questions. I'll start with SALGA. Am I protected?
You
are. Oh, I realize I saw something there. I'll start with SALGA. You see, Madam Chair, beside the proposal which they are proposing, there is something which is worrying me. A few days ago, we saw some strikes all over South Africa, and they, like it or not, people are demonstrating for the ruling party. My worry is one, is that, I don't know, what programs do they have in order to educate our people? In order how to behave during strikes, because if there are silence, that means some of these things, these atrocities, will continue. Simple. What programs do you have? Because, of course, you have touched some very sensitive things, and I'll reserve some of the questions. I thought that we will be having some time with them again to interrogate some of the things which they raised. Then also coming back to the department, DG, on slide number 12, on training and layoff schemes, applications per province. You see, on what was raised by Honorable Dow, I'm also concerned because in Free State there's nothing, Limpopo nothing, West Northern Cape nothing. I'll put a practical example. Free State was among of the provinces which has a lot of concentration of mines and etc. Some of them were shut down. If there's no proposal, I'm raising a concern over that thing. And also in Limpopo, during our program of taking parliament to the people, there were a lot of things which were raised. To an extent, Limpopo is one of the provinces which is having a where the toxicers are going to do off this mushrooming of mines there. And then coming back to another question, DG, there is also a thing which is worrying me in terms of in one of the slides between slide number 10, 9 and 10 where you spoke about the UIF invested 35 billion rands. My worry is one, through our little experience when we visited some of the outlets in Mitchell's Plain and some around in Western Cape, we've learned that there are a lot of people who are waiting for long period beneficiaries who are complaining of not receiving their benefits for a lengthy period of time. Why is it happening? Why we have a lot of money which have been given to you in order to make sure that some of these people, they do receive some of these benefits. And that is worrying. Maybe if you can explain for us. And then also, there is another thing which is worrying me concerning the Auditor General. I wanted to find out whether do you have a risk management, because in terms of the Auditor General under the leadership, it came out clearly that the accounting officer did not effectively exercise oversight responsibility regarding compliance with laws and regulations and related in internal controls relating to asset management, etc., etc. And then again, he said, management did not establish an IT governance framework to support and enables the department to report efficiently on the activities, including reporting and whatever. So it's worrying me in itself. When you talk about those billions which you are investing, how do you monitor them? How do they work? And another challenge, I thought that DG will touch also the issue. There is a thing which we are undermining most of the time. Even in the ILO, coincidentally, we were there as observers, but they didn't speak anything about the child labor. Let us be practical. We go to the streets, around whatever. We are still receiving complaints in farms that some of people are exploiting people, kids. And also, in coal yards, in township, some of the coal yard people are using kids. We are quiet. And go to taxi rank, it's worse in taxi ranks. They are washing, they are not going to school, whatever. There's no proper monitoring, no inspectors, it's silence. You go to corners of our streets. Kids are selling papers. Who's benefiting? For who? Simple, there's no protection for child labor, and it's silence about child labor. If we were vocal, we're supposed to have statistics to indicate that how many people have been disciplined, etc., etc. And then lastly, somewhere here they spoke about the Department of Higher Education, where some resources have been embezzled from the report of the AG's report. I'll be very much grateful if you can indicate that how much was spent, how much was discovered, because some drastic steps have been taken to discipline those particular people. Thank you very much. I'll come in a second round because I've got a lot of things. Thank you.
Let me thank the DG for the presentation that he has made to us. I have a lot of questions, two-page questions. Maybe it is because it is my area of interest. Labor is my area of interest. Let me start with slide number 5. Under 12, we say an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service. I just want to check whether when the department is doing unannounced visits, does it go to its own departments, our own departments? Because normally we have a lot of complaints because there are no work ethics, corruption, no, the departments, the public service don't follow what would be principle. Just want to check on that one. That's the first one. Slide number 7. on job seekers. If you look of opportunities registered, the total figure is 39,000, and placement is 12,000. What does it tell us? Does it mean we don't have skills? Because I think those posts should have been filled, because we've got so many people who have registered. But when it comes to placement, it's only 12,000. So it makes a difference about 20-something thousand. And also what I would like to know, the opportunity registered in different provinces, does it mean it can cross all provinces, that one person can apply to that province, even if, let's say, it's in Western Cape, and I can apply and get a job in the Eastern Cape, or is it specifically for Eastern Cape or Western province? On slide number 12, lay of schemes. On the Free State, I'm just worried about the Free State, because it's 0-0 there. Does it mean... is it true that there were no retrenchments where companies could apply for that facility? Is it correct? Maybe that is exactly what I need to ask. Or maybe do the companies know that they have to apply for this? And how do you inform companies to know that there is such a scheme? On slide number 13, that is, these companies who have been assisted, how do companies receive information? Because if a company is in such a distress, how does it know that it has to apply to the department to get the assistance? Slide number 15. Coming to the Auditor General's report on matters of emphasis, I'm just interested in number 16, 25, 26, 31, 32, 34, and 37. So how are you responding to those challenges that have been identified by the Auditor General? If we could get those responses. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I just want to make a remark on Salga. With our provincial week in the Northwest Province, the chairperson was not attending our opening meeting, and we was really upset with it. He sent a delegation of one person, and I would like if you can follow it up for us and give us an answer what the exact reason was regarding that. And then...
Northwest.
Then to the DG, thank you very much to be here today. We suffered to get your DGs with us, but thank you very much. And thank you for the presentation. I think it is a mouthful to deal with that whole presentation. But I think there's a lot of challenges in the department, and especially if we are looking into how people are suffering to get jobs. And I also want to refer to page 7. The thing there for me is there was 650,000 job seekers. And at the end of the day, only 12,800 is getting jobs. And then I'm very worried about it, because if you are looking into what the promises the president made to South Africa, and we know we are in a very difficult time in our economy in right over the world, and the people outside are looking for jobs, and the pressure is on you, your people, and I do not know what we are going to make to do regarding this problem South Africa has at this stage. Maybe you can give us guidelines regarding that. And then, hand in hand with that, tomorrow and Friday, 26 and 27, 28, there's a big, big march organizing by the youth, starting in Johannesburg, and it's going to Pretoria, and I'm very, very worried about that, because that is all about jobs. I think that's the main thing. And I want to know what role are you playing in this march, and do you have an outcome for these type of marches we've got? I'm really, chairperson, I'm worried about if I see what is how they organize it, and I don't know. The labor centers, we have oversight visits at our labor centers around about here in Cape Town, and what is the other place just outside Cape Town? Mitchell's Plain. The management in these centers is also worrying me, because it seems to me there's a lack of staff.
Let me interrupt. I think we said we're going to discuss the labor centers on the 17th.
Okay. Then I will leave it there. Thank you. Right. The department has reported that there is a deviation by the delegate authority when it comes to appointments to vacant posts at senior management level, SMS. Why is that the case? Is there also deviation at lower levels? And then I also want to know how many women are at the senior management level in the department, and why were the targets not fully met? And the last question is, the department set a target of 50% for the youth employment. However, the department has reported that this target was unrealistic, as there is no structures to implement the youth programs. When did the department realize this, and was it an unrealistic target? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, for SALGA, I hope that the Labour Federation are in consensus of the attempt of amending the piece of legislation in front of them. To the department chairperson, you know, there is a piece of legislation which they call ESTA. And that piece of legislation, when you speak to farm workers, they'll tell you that piece of legislation is only benefiting or protecting the farmers. Because it's the same piece of legislation which is used to get incentives of chasing them away from the farms. Don't they think time has arrived for the review of that piece of legislation? Because I think it was meant for both farm workers and farmers. But at this stage, it's a piece of legislation which is extremely exploited by farm owners at this stage. The other issue, Chairperson, is that I saw that the law enforcement is the department which spends 100% in terms of the budget allocated to them. What I want to know, I knew that law enforcement was allocated some sort of resource in the previous financial year. It's 4x4s and stuff. Could we see results out of that? The beef up of the law enforcement, and does it have enough teeth to operate? Because we spoke of some of the law enforcement in the Western Cape, and they will tell you the extremely difficult situation under their working. But today we'll tell them no. It is a good environment, a good career, and there is results because of the work of the law enforcement. Chairperson, the whole issue of child labour in the Western Cape, it's really a concern. You know, we were very famous a couple of years ago about the DOP stelsel, the DOP system. Now the DOP system is overtaken by the child labour system in the province. Now because you found your agencies which employ temporary workers and serve them from province to province, which don't have no benefits, no UIF, no benefits what at all, but they are still being used in the farming sector as laborers. So we want to know what mechanism is used for those agencies to comply with the Basic Labor Relations Act. Remember, there is also the domestic law. The domestic workers which are extremely exploited because they are not properly coordinated or mobilized and their voice are not being heard properly. So exploitation in those two sectors, which is very vulnerable, are being exploited extremely in the province. I want also to know from the department, I remember there is this thing of the CCMA is working on cases. I think on cases, all the cases can be referred to the CCMA. There is bargaining councils, other people need to have their own lawyers and stuff for representation, but that is in the disadvantage of many, many workers who can't afford to have these consultants in representing them, the labor consultants, which are making fortunes of money because of the CCMA who don't take all the cases. And the other one, Chairperson, is for me a very painful situation for the fact that, you know, this issue of workers with disability and all the departments are just complying for the 2%, which is a requirement for the department to have. You'll see it is a norm right to all the departments. You can see Department of Labor, they just exceeded the 2.7. And I feel, you know, for Chairperson, we visited the deaf school in Worcester. The principal of that school told us, you know, that school accommodates all children in the country. 96% of those children who matriculated there know that they will never be employed. Never be employed. The only institution which employed them is the same institution which trained them. So there is a need for really radically changed approach of this thing of just compliance about the disability people. The other fundamental one, Chairperson, I was listening to my colleagues, you know, the president says that he wants to create this couple of millions of jobs. Here the Department of Labor comes and tells us their contribution so far of this year is 12,000. You see? It's somewhere, somehow, something is wrong in terms of our priorities. Because when the department of any other department, arts and culture, the first question which normally raised, what is your contribution in terms of what the state president wanted to achieve for our country in terms of job opportunities? How many jobs does you as a department contribute towards the national target? And where we are, and where I'm sitting from, I might not be informed on the level where the department is, but what I'm having in front of me saying that my interpretation says that 12,000 works so far should be contributed towards the 500,000 jobs created. The other fundamental issue, Chairperson, is the issue of training, which I believe is our training of today is the future of tomorrow. But if you look in terms of the department's 7,217 on page 8, your job seekers refer to skill development opportunities. I think skill development should be the fundamental basis for us. Because you understand we have your semi-skilled, your skilled, especially those who fall in the bracket of not employable. To bring them in a market where they be able to compete. And the only contribution to that one is skills. And I feel the department should spend more on skills because of our country, the way we found ourselves in. You know, I was so painful, Chairperson, on Monday, listening to the presentation of the IDZ. And people just tell you that here we are. You want to invest billions in your country, but you don't have the necessary skills. 2,000 welders were imported 2 years ago from Portugal, from all over the country. 2,000 welders. But what happens with us in terms of our own training and development programs in the country? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. From myself, DG, I didn't want to say we appreciate before the members say so. So my question is a follow-up to, I think it's Honorable Jacobs, when he spoke about the department. How do you do your inspections in the department? Because definitely there are workers in all these departments. Have you started, and if you have not, by when do you think you'll go through the department to inspect whether they are also complying? And also the other one is on the bills that are before NEDLAC. How long have these bills been before NEDLAC? When are they coming to Parliament? Because if you look at the volume of bills that are before NEDLAC, definitely I think it's going to will arrive in 2014, whilst the bills are still there, and will go, then they'll start afresh. So by when do you think NEDLAC will be done with these bills? And then the other one is on job seekers. You know, last time I think we did raise this. We thank you for provincial breakdowns. But also we requested that the job seekers, if you break them down per province, we must know on the job seekers, youth, women, you know, that breakdown we needed so that we are able to follow up on how many youth have been placed, how many women. And the other thing that is really worrying, it's as my colleagues have mentioned, the domestic workers. That one also, I think we must also have a separate report on domestic workers, because those are also the people who are actually exploited. Salga,
we want to share with you. Domestic workers. We must have a separate report on domestic workers. I think it can we can have it with this coal yards, children workers who have been exploited, child labor, tax rent, because domestic workers also from long ago they have been exploited, and it's like we are not actually putting efforts in the domestic workers. So for now, I'll give it over to you, DG, but thanks for the comprehensive presentation. But you know, with the select committee, we've got more issues than what you give to us. Thank you. Over to you.
It's all right. It's all right. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, let me just indicate that I'm certain that some of the questions will also be responded to by our delegation in their respective branches and so on. But I do want to take on some few. Some of the issues that have been raised by honorable members, they will also dovetail, and actually they do dovetail with the discussion of a report that should be also coming to the select committee on our provincial visits. For instance, let me give you an example. The issue of capacity is a specific point, and we have identified this as a specific problem. The issue of capacity located within the Department of Labor to be able to meet its service delivery objectives. In some of the instances, including the issue of inspections, for an example, it's also hamstrung by this. But also combined with that, there is also the element of, I think in the report, in our presentation, we also spoke about the issue of professionalization, and that talks to the issue of capacity as well. Associated with this, you will see that as and when we deal with that report, we also raise quite an issue around the question of our labor centers. Labor centers as in terms of where they are located, but also the state of your current labor centers and so forth. So these are a number of broader issues that we think that as and when we appear before this committee, we will be able to share with yourselves what those specific issues are relating to issues of capacity, but also what our thought process is. You know, the long and short of it is that we will want, in responding to some of these issues, we will want to take stock of where organization is and how well positioned is it towards it meeting its deliverables and so on. So in essence, we think that we will eventually be confronted with the issue of conducting an organizational review exercise. Now, the question around foreign labor, I agree. I hope you will get some clarity on the question of why is it that we do not have targets in this regard. But just to indicate that within the context of the labour market situation and system in South Africa, there appears to be a growing sort of dynamic. I don't know how to call it a problem. For instance, one of the things that we want to do, we want to conduct a specific study in Limpopo. There is a place they call Musina, and when people talk to you, they say Musina is no longer South African, you know, by definition and correct, and in terms of things that are happening there. And therefore, the demographics and the character of your labor market outlook there has changed. Now, we had targeted, for instance, that by the end of this week we'll go there to just go and conduct that study. Unfortunately, because of other engagements, I've asked that we postpone that particular visit. But it arises out of this work, again, that we had done in terms of provincial visits and so on. So we do share perhaps a common perspective or thinking with the select committee on the issue of, you know, attraction of foreign labor and foreign companies also applying for foreign labor. I mean, there are trends that need to be followed. I mean, there is the issue, I don't want to talk much about this particular case because I also picked it up quite recently, in Gauteng, for an example, in terms of how some of the foreign companies, they also go about, you know, escaping the South African legislative framework, and perhaps, I'm not sure, in terms of the honourable member from the Western Cape who talks about 2,000 welders, that South Africa, because that seems to want to suggest that we do not have 2,000 welders in South Africa, and probably that's hard to believe. But we may find that it is also part of some of these tendencies that are beginning to crop up, in, you know, in an attempt by either some companies or not to you know, to try and go around and escape the legislative framework that governs the labour market system and sort of. But those are some of the trends that we will want to follow. Now, there are broader points that have been raised, and some of the points I do think that are points that must be responded to somewhere else. Let me give you an example. The issue of youth unemployment, it's a global problem. It's a global problem. In fact, in every forum where internationally where you know there are discussions around issues of job creation, this is a specific point. So it's not just simply a South African or confined a South African problem. Our statistics show that, for instance, you have a rate of unemployment affecting young people in South Africa stands at about 74%, and that's a very worrying point. So it is, but at the same time, I think it has to be understood that our role as the Department of Labour is to make a contribution in the overall effort of job creation. In other words, how do I put it? I think, in other words, we do not create jobs. We operate within an existing economy. We operate within an existing economic framework and so on. And ours is to play our role in there, in ensuring that we facilitate the issue of job creation. Now, and some of the limitations, and that's why I was also drawing the attention of the honourable members, that some of the limitations are simply this. You may be having 10 opportunities that we need, you know, that are brought to our attention as the Department of Labour. And therefore you also have you need to capture and register job seekers in order to meet, let's say, the 10 opportunities that I've spoken about. The likelihood is that you may be getting 10 people, but out of the 10 people, in terms of profile, you only have 5 to 6 people that fit the required sort of detail and profile insofar as the job opportunities are concerned. Or you could also have a situation where you are looking for 10 people, but you have 50 people that are captured on the system, registered by the system, and therefore you can only afford to place 10 out of 50. So what does this tell you? It tells you that we have an economy that is unable, as we speak, to absorb a mass base of job seekers. And it has nothing to do with the Department of Labor, and that's where my qualification comes in. It has nothing to do with the Department of Labor. It says these are the opportunities that are there, and these are the people that register on your system, and this is the profile. But in terms of meeting the actual demand, you find that you have far a bigger number and greater number of people who are looking for jobs than what is available in the market and so on. So that's the difficulty. Now the other point that I think that was raised that I would want to also talk about is the issue of there are issues affecting. I think we talk of trend, but I think, Chair, we should also take into account that the agencies that we're using are no longer with us. They've been taken over and transferred to the Department of Higher Education and Training. As a result, we will not be able in this meeting to properly reflect on it, including the question of, you know, what has happened to people who are alleged to have embezzled. This is English. Embezzled resources. This is English. I'm sorry, I'm Zulu licensed. Embezzled resources. So we'll not be able to reflect on that at this stage. We also will not be able to properly reflect on the question of training. Now, I know that this is a concerning point, the question of training layoff schemes. And you remember, Chair, that in our presentation we said, either you have a situation where there is an opportunity, but that opportunity is not being used by companies in terms of applying, like companies perhaps in the Free State and so forth. Either that's one thing, or you could have a situation where either there was absolutely no retrenchment, but then, of course, you have quite a different experience, for instance, from other provinces and so on. now that's the problem, because again, our system works on the basis of applications. If you don't receive an application, indeed you're going to reflect that you have not received an application and therefore you did not train anybody. Where you have received an application, you say, I've received an application and these are the funds that have been allocated affecting so many X number of people in terms of the training layoff schemes. So I think that's one thing, and I think I would take it as a suggestion for an example. That perhaps we'll also need to make efforts on our side as the Department of Labor in terms of, you know, just simply marketing these kinds of services out there so that they are commonly known and so on. Because you may find that there are different reasons. You know, a company, because of either attitude or otherwise, it may also choose not to apply for a training layoff scheme, but also on the basis of ignorance, not knowing that there is such a service that can be offered, that is offered by the Department of Labor, it could also not apply. So I'm just saying that I'll take it as a suggestion that we do need to try and do our level best insofar as that is concerned. There is the issue around the matter affecting child labor. Now, South African law is very clear on this issue of child labor. In fact, I would want to talk about child labor, domestic workers and farm workers, perhaps in one lump. And I think we should realize that part of the problem in the main is the extent to which all of us, whether department or members of the South African citizenry, the work that needs to be done in conscientizing people about the rights that they have and how those rights can then be exercised and so on. Because you can have a right, but if you do not organize and structure yourself around the pursuance and execution of that right, the right itself cannot realize, cannot realize itself, per se. You know? So I think it relates mainly to the issue of the degree of social consciousness that we need to generate amongst the South African citizenry to deal with the issues of this nature and also to adhere and comply to laws that are there. I'm raising this thing not because I want the Department of Labor to be absolved from the responsibility of following through with given pieces of legislation affecting the labor market circumstance in the country, but because in all fairness, given the kind of constraints that we also do have as the Department of Labor, we will not be able to stand here and promise that which we will not be in a position to do and say, no, we'll cover every child, we'll cover every farm, we'll cover every company and so on and stuff like that. We'll get the, it's just simply not possible for us to say so at this stage. On the question of people with disabilities, I agree. The report that we published through the Employment Commission shows that, you know, in the past year there hasn't been movement at all on the question of attracting people with disabilities right across. I'm not talking about people in the Department of Labor. Okay. The fact that we had said to ourselves that we needed to achieve our target by at least 5%, but we are standing at 3% in itself is indicative of the amount of work that needs to be done insofar as the issue of attracting people with disabilities. The ESTA piece of legislation, honourable member, I do think that it essentially belongs to Land Affairs and Agriculture. It has probably very little to do with us. If there is anything that it has to do with us, probably the suggestion will be that there would be a need for the two departments to work together around coordinating mechanisms and efforts in the realization of this piece of legislation called the ESTA. I would then ask my colleagues in no order of a sequence or priority, Madam Chairperson, to also respond to some of the issues.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks to Honorable Members. Just briefly on the wage subsidy, the current legal arrangements that exist with relation to allowances are contained in the Skills Development Act and the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. But what has since happened, and especially with regard to apprentices, learners in learnerships, and internships, this is where a young person would come in and either through a collective bargaining determined wage or a wage that was set up by the Minimum Standard Commission, the young person will be given that rate. Now, there's no problem around that because that is either negotiated in the bargaining council or is set up by the minister as a determination under the Employment Standards Commission. The big debate, however, that has come in was to introduce a new wage subsidy that is outside of that framework. And currently there is a debate that says, how do you do that? Because if you come up with a wage subsidy that is outside of the legal framework, you may cause a two-tier labor market system. And this matter is being debated in a forum at NEDLAC as well to try and see how best this issue of a wage subsidy that is outside of the current legal framework can be introduced because it can have far-reaching implications, issues such as displacement effect, because some people argue that the minute you do that, you may end up replacing adult workers with young people, and you may end up creating further exploitation, and you may end up causing serious industrial relations problems when young people later realize that they are being underpaid for work of equal value and so on. And yet other people are arguing that in the light of massive unemployment, you need some kind of intervention that will facilitate the inflow of young people, and to do that you need to subsidize an employer, but the actual mechanisms around how you do that, that's where there's no agreement and the continuing debate at NEDLAC. Just on a question raised by Honorable Sibande around the number of companies that are not applying for training layoff. I think the DG covered extensively around some of the problems. The other thing that we have now done, just to add on what the DG said, was to also amend the criteria for people to qualify for the training layoff. Honorable members will remember that this facility was introduced to respond to the global recession. Now, there were instances, for instance, where people lost jobs after the end of the construction of stadiums, roads that were in line with the 2010 World Cup. Now, the job losses in those areas has nothing to do with the recession, but you do have a situation, I mean, where incidences like Daum, floods that resulted in loss of jobs in agriculture. So the criteria have since been amended to open up, because there is still money available under the training layoff scheme. And the DG talked about advertising and all that, which we will do to make sure that we assist as many companies as we can and make sure that they participate in the scheme. There was a question from Honorable Jacobs on the issues around the opportunities which the DG covered extensively, but just to add a few points, that often some of the criteria that employers are putting are becoming problematic, and we've since challenged that. You'll find that in some careers they will specifically want people who can do a laborer's job, but then they will say people must speak Chinese or they must speak Malawian. Look at some of the adverts that are beginning to appear in the retail sector, and the argument is that our clientele in most cases is Malawian, and therefore we want people who can speak that language. And yet the issue is that either an employer has already employed people from those countries and they just want to justify the protection or continued employment of those people. In some
some cases we found that we don't have measures to assist our people to move in the country. For example, if you are a public servant and you go for an interview in, you are in Gauteng, you go for an interview in the Northern Cape, the Northern Cape department will pay for your transport, and if you happen to be successful, they will pay for your accommodation for 2 months until you can sort out your accommodation. Now, often what happens in the country, and this is what we are trying to also address in terms of the bill, is to have measures that if there's a job in the Eastern Cape and there are welders, for instance, that are in Western Cape Saldanha that worked on some of the pipelines and all that, that you can have measures to firstly assist those people to go for interviews, and if they're successful, they are also assisted to stay in those areas for a while until they can sort out their accommodation. Currently, there is no facility, and that is why some employers would normally quickly justify an application to bring in some people from other countries, because already they cite a question of pressure and unavailability of those people within a specific area. So these are some of the challenges that exist. There was also a question on the, I think the DG dealt with the question of the training layoff scheme. Let me not repeat it. The issue around the assistance to secure permanent employment from Honorable Groenewald, I think the DG also touched on this issue. But I think over and above just the numbers, I think it is only fair to indicate that the Department of Labor's role should be seen within the context of assisting people to enter employment. Where people are in employment, most of our labor laws are aimed at ensuring industrial peace so that we don't lose existing jobs. Where we face possible retrenchment, our social plan interventions and training layoff schemes are also aimed at ensuring that we save those jobs. Where we invest in the PIC in the form of the UIF and the compensation fund billions, honorable members must remember that when you see an airport such as Cape Town, Johannesburg, the big freeways that have been improved, the Department of Labor has contributed in that the monies don't just sit in the bank. The Public Investment Corporation takes that money, in turn lends it to your ESCOMs, your big companies that are involved in EXA and so on. And we are only demanding an interest rate that is very, very much below inflation, in some cases in the region of 6%, to build the big infrastructure that honorable members are seeing. The credit is not given to us because we have not been able to demand from those companies in their report to indicate exactly the projects that they've invested in and the actual jobs that they've created. Often when ESCOM says these are the jobs that are created, it is seen as ESCOM in Milugi project, and yet it is the Department of Labor, amongst other departments, including government pension fund, that has borrowed money to them to implement those projects. And as part of addressing that problem, we have now amended our agreement with the Public Investment Corporation to demand that in the investment they provide such details so that we can answer such questions. I think the just to add on the people with disability,
Honorable members, over and above the measures that we have in the department, I think the department is also playing a major role in the form of sheltered employment factories. Those factories employ about 97% of staff employed in those factories are people with disabilities. And if we can get the procurement, honorable members must remember that the preferential procurement was taken away. With preferential procurement or with the innovations that we're bringing in, those factories have the potential to move from the current 1,000 to about 3,000 people with disability that are manufacturing good furniture that can compete with this and in some cases even out to surpass this one. You need to go to Weatherly's and the furniture that is supplied to government villages is supplied through Weatherly's and manufactured by sheltered employment factories. there are some that Weatherly's is buying, is sourcing from us, honorable members. Very good quality furniture. But Weatherly is sourcing from us, that's the point I'm making. There are some that are public works sourcing from others, but I think this is a program that is also aimed at making sure that instead of just leaving people with disability at home to get 1,400 or so disability grant, we're able to make sure that they participate actively in the mainstream of the economy and get an income that is higher than what the original was. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there is a question from Mr. Sibande about how does the department monitor the investments that is mentioned on page on slide number 10. I think we need to indicate that we have governance structures, which is the board from the whole the UIF and the compensation fund. We also have the investment committee, which is involved in this particular investment. What they do, they design an investment strategy to indicate how the money should be invested. And the PIC, Mr. Mrodova, has already talked about it. Quarterly, they come and give a report on how the money is invested. That is the first monitoring part. The second one, you have an internal audit that will actually monitor to ensure that the money is invested the way it is in the investment mandate. You also have the audit committee, which is independent, which is a control measure to ensure that the money is invested correctly. And finally, the auditor general will do the audit on those investments. Chairperson, the other question is about the money that is not paid in Mission's play. I think from our information, the only people who have outstanding payments over a long period of time are the ex-mine workers, and the department has put a committee to deal with those particular payments. One of the reasons is because they don't have adequate information to support their claims that they're making. And their claims are dated from 1992, and they're saying they cannot give the documents because they have been dismissed from the mines, and they were worse when they were moving out of the mines. But if there is information to the effect that there are people in Mitchell's Bay who want to engage with him and pay those people as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The question that was asked by Honorable Member Jacobs on the AGIS report and what we're doing in terms of the PPP contract that we have on the IT side. I think Honorable Members know that has been the proverbial albatross around our necks at the department. But we are pleased also to inform members that, in fact, we are doing something about it. The contract comes to an end at the end of next year, so in about 13-14 months' time. it'll be coming to an end. So in the meantime, we are going through an exit and transfer process to ensure that there's a smooth transition between now and when we exit the contract. It has been fraught with a number of problems, including issues around service level agreements, deliveries, etc., etc. But we are working very hard towards ensuring that once we exit that that contract, all is well. So, thanks.
Honourable Chair, the question on the compliance to audit queries by the provinces that was asked, I think the recorded response is that as a department with 9 provinces, in terms of financial management, the provinces and the head office are at different stages of financial maturity. There are those provinces in terms of finance that will be probably high performers and the middle performers, and to some isolated incidents, province that probably is far behind. In terms of the interventions, there has been some workshops that I have conducted with the financial people in the provinces in terms of drawing up the action plan and monitoring it before the end of the financial year. Also, the financial staff do visit provinces to do some inspections. And in some isolated incidents, I have sent some officials to sit in the province for the period of 2 to 3 weeks, trying to help to build capacity in specific in a specific province. In terms of the question on goods and services that was asked in terms of the procurement. Yes, as a department, we still have to improve the way we plan. However, there is an element of probably reporting. As government departments, we report on cash accounting, which means we report on the cash that has been allocated within a 12-month period. There are instances where on the 12 months, you procure goods, you receive goods or services, but you don't pay for those goods. You pay for them in the next financial year, in which case is then termed an accrual, and we then apply to the Treasury to roll over the funds for that specific year to pay for them in the next financial year. I think on the issue of the AG's report, unfortunately the honourable member did not specify in our honourable report. We've got set of financial statements, one for the department and the other one for sheltered employment factories. My guess is that she was referring to the sheltered employment factories. I just want to double check that I got all the queries correct. It was number 16, 21, 23, 31, and 37. If I can maybe respond on each one of them. On the issue of number 16 on sheltered employment services annual report, the AG report, in terms of irregular, fruitless and wasteful. This was the irregular expenditure, not fruitless and wasteful. What is happening in the sheltered employment factories is that they have identified key suppliers that supply them with the quality material that they need to do furniture. What we need to beef up here is that we faltered on the Treasury regulations in terms of the competitive bidding process by not opening up that process. We need then to go back to our supply chain procedures to make sure that we specify, because the factory managers there, they are very, very specific on the type of wood they need and the quality. So it's only supplied by the few suppliers within the country. On 21, in terms of the performance information, I think as a department we are working in terms of improving our performance information as it was reported by the AG. Number 23 is also the same with regard to the performance information and the targets. I think it's the same answer that we are
still improving. We have developed and approved the policy on performance information. Ours is to then apply the performance information in the current year. Number 31, it also deals with the accounting officer did not take appropriate steps to collect outstanding money timely as required in terms of Treasury Regulations 11.2. Honorable Chair, I think here we'll have to report that yes, we have some difficulties in terms of collecting money from government departments that have procured through sheltered employment. Their debtors book is growing by the day. Procedures are underway in terms of recovering those monies. We have asked the assistance of the National Treasury in terms of helping us to do exactly that, because we can't normally engage in the normal collecting procedures that are applied by the by the private companies. We are talking about the government departments that have procured furniture from sheltered employment. Number 37, in terms of preparing the regular, accurate and complete financial statements and performance reports, here we are beefing up the capacity in terms of sheltered employment, in terms of getting the financial staff to do this exercise. We have had challenges before in terms of complying with this, making sure that there are monthly reconciliations and monthly financial reports at the end of each year, at the end of each month, rather. That's all that I can pick up. I'm not sure whether I've missed some other numbers in terms of the AG report from the sheltered employment factories.
34.
Policies and procedures that were not developed and implemented. This we are correcting with the sheltered employment factories to make sure that they have got up to date policies and procedures that also include the issue of number 16 that we mentioned earlier, in terms of making sure that in our policies and procedures we specify that in procuring goods and services, we're going to invite selected suppliers that they are sure that they supply the good quality material that they need. But the process is underway to make sure that the process and process are up to date. Thank you.
A short one, please, because I'm afraid we are running out of time and we must adopt the meeting.
No, Madam Chair. I won't go longer. It's only one thing which I wanted to raise, a little bit concerned. I was impressed about the response from the Chief Financial Officer, Babu Maduna. And that is it. When Anduna goes, you can't think what a child who was part back. You see, Baba Udu was. You ought to be very careful, because we refer to the documents we got in front of us. When I raise the issue of risk management, and I can go deeper and deeper, in Auditor's General Report, it says under Financial and Performance Management 2021. You can read there in your own report which you got, 2021, where they said management did not implement adequate risk management. While in his report he said they were, they are, whatever. I prefer an honest response like this one, that we have tried to do this. I'd like to say we do have this and this and this and this, because this is very sensitive to us. Because when Anduna goes, some of our officials, they are misleading us. They don't tell you the honest fact in order to rectify. Because I'll ask you a simple question, who constitutes them? If you do have, who constitutes them? Also, that is the key fundamental thing, that if you do have a risk management, such and such are constituted. That's where lies the problem. Because we are talking about billions of rands, not millions, billions of rands. I'll keep it there. Next time when we come back, I'll be on top of that one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, the investment of the UI and the compensation fund, they are in the report of the two funds. And the Auditor General has not raised an issue around those issues. I was not responding to issues of risk management. I was responding to the issues of controls within the investments of the two funds. Thanks.
No, ma'am. As you promised that they are coming back. Let's leave it now. I don't want to make a dialogue among ourselves. Thank you.
For those responses then that you were saying you are still working on them, when you come back on.
Honorable Chairperson, may I respond to those that I can?
Yes.
On the issue of the reviews, or the DG reviews as it's also commonly referred to, very simply, it's an audit or a very detailed audit that scratches at the bone of the company. Now, around the DG review, what happens there is every company that is required to have a plan in terms of the Employment Equity Act, drafts that plan, and it could be for a period of up to 5 years. That plan then, there's a report that's required, and companies report on those plans. So you'll have the report against the plan, and you'll also have the wage differentials against which they also report. Now, what happens here is the inspectors basically go in and do an audit against those documents, and they scratch at the very bone what is happening within the company. And very simply, after they've done that, recommendations are made in regard to what they've found at the company. Those recommendations then they do follow up with the company concerned. Our challenge around this is that the current legislation, because of certain court challenges that we've had, the amendment that's currently doing its rounds seeks to address some of those challenges that we have encountered. So it's vital for us that legislation does go through so that we can address some of the things. It's not so easy for us to take these things through the courts where we've already experienced challenges with the court around this. So it's also anticipated that the company develops policies to address some of the issues that we know exist around this matter. The JSE, and why do we specifically highlight this area? The reason for that is these are the companies that profile South Africa as well. And it's vital for us to know that they're doing things right. They're obviously involved in imports, exports, amongst other things, and we need to know that they are exhibiting the right sort of profile for our country. So it also deals with the issue of recommendations that then goes to the company, and as I said, those are then followed up. As far as the green cars are concerned, I cannot indicate to you what sort of impact there's been in this regard. We're willing to look into that and then also to provide you with a report around that. Around whether or not we do need cars, I think without a doubt, we were in a scheme where cars or motor vehicles were definitely on a scheme for inspectors, to apply for and get access to motor vehicles. Those schemes have subsequently come to an or are coming to an end, and yes, we do need additional vehicles for the inspectors. I'm not able to respond to the issue around the Western Cape talks and the extreme difficulties they face. We would need to look into that. And then something that I need clarity on is the issue of how inspection is done. I'm not sure if that relates to government departments specifically or is it in general?
Government departments.
Generally, Madam Chair, on any of the pieces of the legislation that we administer, we might do inspections around that, but there's not a very specific drive that we do inspections around other government departments. Just out of interest, we do inspections on our own Department of Labour as well, so we're not sort of exempting ourselves from our own legislation, but we do other government departments. The extent of that, I'm not able to respond to here. We have, in the past, closed off certain places where they have not complied. We've literally closed off, prohibited government departments from using buildings or courts, forensic laboratories and so on, due to the fact that they don't comply with certain pieces of our legislation. Madam Chair, I think for myself, I've responded to several of the areas. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to the councillors for the opportunity. I wanted to respond on two or three issues. The first issue is the issue of child labour. Well, apart from, as the DJ has explained, how the Act deals and how legislation deals with child labour, beyond that, what we've developed is also a child labour program of action in consultation with all the stakeholders, organised business, labour and civil society, in order to address the issue of child labour. Incidentally, with Stats South Africa, we've done a survey that was attached to the quarterly labour force survey to indicate the size of the problem that we have. And there are two areas where Stats South Africa has indicated where child labour is more prominent. One is the issue on subsistence agriculture, and two is the area of home-based activities, such as, for example, and specifically your spaza shops. And those are the two areas that we will highlight in terms of our work forward in dealing with child labour. But also highlight the specific areas where child labour is more prominent than in other areas. Eastern Cape, for example, where you have a higher prominence of child labour or child-headed households, is an area that we would be targeting within the next phase of the child labour program of action. As you well know, Chair, I want to address address the issue of domestic work. As you're well aware, we have done a lot of work around domestic workers in South Africa. We've developed a sectoral determination that covered by the UI. In fact, the last figure that we quoted was that there's almost 75 or 80% compliance of domestic workers with the UI legislation. But we're also working with the unions in the sector to strengthen. There's one huge union in the sector, SATSAU, which we're working on to develop the capacity and to strengthen the capacity of the domestic worker union. Just on a point that the DG also raised, the issue of ESTA, there are two touch points that we have. Firstly, that ESTA is in the process of being amended by the Department of Land Affairs, as the DG has pointed. But there are two areas that we're working on. One is that labor tenants that are normally excluded from the protection of the labour is covered by the labour legislation. And two is the issue that people that have accrued rights in terms of ESTA do not lose these rights because they are employees in this regard, and we have set certain standards of accommodation for these workers. So I just wanted to address those issues.
Thank you very much. I think let me thank the department for the responses and the presentation, and to say that all those responses that you had that we are not satisfied with, I think when you come back, can we have the responses? And let me also thank, can you switch your mic off, please? Let me also thank SALGA for coming for the presentation. I think you heard that when I said that the bills are still with NEDLAC. And the question wasn't responded to when I asked the question by until when will these bills be with NEDLAC, by when will we as Parliament deal with the this legislation? Because I think your presentation came, you thought maybe we are as Parliament busy with these bills, but they are still with NEDLAC, and you didn't respond to say by when, and there are many. We want for this term to go to 2014, have finalized these bills, so that those who will be coming after, they must start on the new, you know, slate. So can we hear?
All I can say is that I'm certain that the bills, you know, by the time 2014 hits, they would have been long finalized. It's difficult to answer specifically as to by when precisely, because the NEDLAC process is highly dependent on the extent of engagement and cooperation by social partners. critical stage as we speak. So that's why, amongst other things, some of the managers that should have been here are not here today, because they're also attending to that. Amongst other things, we have also highlighted in our presentation that our minister is also making an intervention to nudge social partners to move on this question. So we certainly do hope that by the fall of this year, there should have been a movement, at least the latest in terms of those bills being referred back to Parliament for consideration. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And I think also, Siko, you also looked at the issues that were raised on ILO, and then you will advise us in due course. Thanks very much, Salga. Thank you very much, and then you must, you know, come all the time. As I said, you are members of the NCOP. We would like to engage with you on issues affecting provinces. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned, but there is no lunch. You had enough breakfast. Thank you very much.
And you come.